from your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Robin. Welcome to a new episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Wednesday night, July 9th, 2025, as we record this new episode. This weekend is the 2005 World Series reunion and the last series prior to the All-Star break. Mark Burley will finally get his statue, which will be made public on Friday night. Plenty of 2005 White Sox players will be visiting, including Paul Konerko, AJ Pierzynski, Jose Contreras, Freddy Garcia, John Garland, and plenty others. It's going to be a very festive weekend as the Cleveland Guardians visit. We'll preview that weekend series, and on Sunday, it's a very important day for the Chicago White Sox as it's the 2025 Major League Baseball Draft. I'll be hosting a draft watch party for the first round on the Sox Machine Playback channel at playback.tv/SoxMachine starting at 5 p.m. Central Time. If you want more draft chatter, listen to our previous episode where I sat down with MLB.com's Jim Callis to go over options for the White Sox at pick number 10. With it being such a busy weekend, Chicago White Sox general manager Chris Getz sat down with the media earlier this week. He first started with the passing of Bobby Jenks, who was an ex-teammate of Getz's.
You know, personally, you know, I was lucky to play with him in 2008 and 2009. And, you know, I think you can pick up the theme when everyone talks about Bobby and what a great teammate he was. Just a big heart. He was just this, you know, almost fun-loving kid and obviously a tremendous competitor, you know, on the mound. You know, he didn't have an easy life. He didn't. You know, and I know that his family's got to be really going through it right now. It's obviously really sad. And, you know, we've got the reunion coming up here shortly, and it'll be nice to have, you know, a lot of those guys around and you know, tell stories about Bobby Jenks and the impact that he made on this organization, but you know, more importantly on them. So he'll be, you know, dearly missed. You know, I'm just happy that I was able to play with him because he really was a special person.
The recent big transaction for Getz was calling up Colson Montgomery, who followed up his impressive debut against the Colorado Rockies going 5-for-10 last weekend to batting 1-for-8 against the Toronto Blue Jays over three games. Getz explained the thought process of calling up Montgomery now.
He had an incredible week, you know, with just the amount of hits, the power. I know he was playing really sound defense. And, you know, you're never certain on what the ideal time is. You know, kind of had that, you know, circled on the calendar that maybe this could make sense. And, you know, talked to Will and the staff and decided to pull the trigger after talking to the PD group. Paul Janisch was very supportive of it, and it looked like the right decision.
So far, Getz is really happy with what he's seen from Montgomery in his first six games.
I'm really proud of him. You know, we talked, you know, now it was months ago. You know, I gave him a call and just to kind of do a little check-in. And, you know, he's going through it. He was really struggling. And I said, hey, we're going to figure this out. You're going to figure this out. You just can't quit. He goes, I'm not going to quit. And he didn't. Obviously, it's well documented that he went to Arizona, put the work in, came back, and you know, got it back together, and you know, he was swinging really well. And then now to have him back with the big league, or up with the big league club, and starting in Colorado, he looked very comfortable on both sides of the ball, and you know, and you know, hopefully he continues, but. You know, we believe in the player, we believe in the person, and you know, most importantly, he deserves the credit, but it's a big deal for this organization.
There are two big items for all general managers in July, the MLB draft and the trade deadline, which will be on July 31st at 5 p.m. Central Time. Get shared what the trade market currently looks like.
You know, every organization is in meetings and, you know, really focused on preparing for the draft and then executing the draft. You know, conversations still happen, maybe not at the pace that they do you know, post draft or maybe even prior to the draft. But yeah, the conversations will continue, but they do quiet down for this week and into the draft. But then you know you don't have a whole lot of time before you need to really focus on essentially the trade season, which is always very active. We'll have conversations, and if you feel like we can better our organization for the long term, we'll certainly you know consider it.
Speaking of the draft, I'll have a new mock draft this weekend and also a draft report with more details and prospects that could be available to the White Sox at pick 10 and at pick 44. Without giving out his hand, Getz is making it clear that this year's draft strategy will be focused on adding more position players.
Knowing where we are as an organization and the difficulty of acquiring, you know, really quality everyday position players at the deadline, and some of that, you know, is just the pool of talent that's out there. You know, when you find a guy that you can feel like can be an everyday player at the major league level, you know, teams really value that, and it can be difficult to pry. But then you'll find some organizations that are highly motivated to go for it and want to try to win a World Series, and you might be able to net something. So, yeah, I mean, primarily we're focused on bats in the draft. When it comes to trades, you know, we'll try to pry the best talent that we have, and it could be pitching, could be position players, but going into it, we're looking to improve our offense long term.
What kind of position player gets his eye in at pick number 10? Think up the middle.
We're targeting premium position, and not only shortstop at center field, knowing that the shortstop likely can play second or third, or perhaps are athletic enough to go to the outfield, and the center fielders can go to the wings. You know, that is, I would say, fundamentally the approach of most clubs, but we're certainly prioritizing that. You know, shortstops are very difficult to find. You know, going back to the trade deadline, it's not easy to pry a shortstop, an everyday shortstop. So the best way to get that talent into your system is likely drafting them or signing them on the international side. So I love shortstops. I mean, I really do. I think that they're, it's obviously a highly skilled position, and, you know, it's a very demanding position as well. So, you know, if they're able to handle the responsibilities of shortstop, they're likely going to be able to, you know, handle the responsibilities of other positions around the field.
Once the MLB draft is over and the All-Star break festivities subside, the trade discussions will heat up for Getz, especially for two veterans that have been performing well recently in Mike Tauchman and Adrian Hauser. Getz has been very happy with the offensive production he's seen from Tauchman.
Tauch's been outstanding. He really has. And, you know, we were excited about getting him, you know, just because he puts together quality at bats. He always has. You know, and I think he's exceeded just quality at bats, and there's been some real production. He's been very consistent. So, you know, we will weigh all the different options. You know, having Mike Tauchman with the White Sox is a good thing. But you know, if conversations pick up and it makes sense, then you know we'll do a deep dive. But right now, we really enjoy putting him in the lineup as regularly as we can.
As for Adrian Hauser, he continues to roll as he helped snap the Toronto Blue Jays' 10-game winning streak on Wednesday, only allowing one run over seven innings. In nine starts with the White Sox, Hauser has a 1.56 ERA over 57 and two-thirds innings. Hauser was intended to help eat innings for a White Sox pitching staff that saw its depth get impacted with significant injuries during spring training. Now, Hauser has been pitching so well, it's going to be hard to keep him past July 31st.
Definitely want to protect our young arms. You know, that was the, you know, quite honestly, the motivation in acquiring Adrian Hauser and a Savali, to be able to give guys, you know, extra days rest, or if someone gets nicked up and needs to go on the IL for a little bit, we could have someone step up and fill those quality innings. Now, you know, when it comes to, you know, an upcoming deadline, you know, first and foremost, it's my job to, you know, continue to build this organization, and have this, you know, I would say long-term view, you know, so I but weighing the protection of his young arms and, you know, perhaps acquiring some future assets that can help you win some games in the future. It's not a, you know, straightforward answer. It isn't. You know, you look at our minor league system, and you look at Tanner McDougal, who's really taken some strides, and Davis Martin, you know, will be back here shortly. He's going to have a rehab out in Charlotte this week, and you know, you look at the potential you know, acquisitions that you can make with some of the deals as well, and perhaps it's an arm that can help you right away. So we've got some time to work through it. First and foremost, we're really focused on the draft right now, and then we'll turn the page to get ready for the deadline.
A Sox Machine public service announcement. We have brand new items in the Sox Machine store. With the weather heating up, we've got new Adidas Sox Machine polos, perfect for your company outings, casual Fridays, and of course the golf course. It's part of our media attire as well when covering events. You can grab any of these three styles that we now have in the store. We've got new Sox Machine coffee mugs to sip from while you read Jim and James in the morning, new stainless steel water bottles with the Sox Machine logo, and fanny packs, which fanny packs have been very helpful entering Major League Baseball stadiums with all the bag restrictions. Visit shop.soxmachine.com to check out the new gear. And for Sox Machine subscribers, remember your discount code to get an additional discount when checking out. Again, the URL is shop.soxmachine.com. Let's pick up the conversation regarding the White Sox top trade assets and Adrian Hauser and Mike Tauchman. Joining me is the managing editor of soxmachine.com. It's Jim Margulis. And hello, Jim. Adrian Hauser does it again. So the Blue Jays had a 10-game winning streak. They were looking to sweep the White Sox. And as I just mentioned in the intro, while getting and sending out Chris Getz's comments, especially Getz's original plans with Adrian Hauser was please help out with the starting rotation depth to, well, he's pitching so well, I can't keep him past July 31st now. Hauser just keeps doing it. Seven innings, only one run allowed. Did Wednesday start against the Blue Jays increase Hauser's trade value?
It didn't hurt, I think is the safe way to put it. It's funny, Adrian Hauser is basically what the White Sox thought Aaron Civale was going to be, and Aaron Civale is what Adrian Hauser was supposed to be in terms of like, help us get the season over. And Civale, you know, was the, we can trade him for something because he was worth somebody last year. And now it looks like Civale, the way he's throwing, is going to be hard to move or uninspiring to move, maybe better to keep just to fill out the rotation versus like the player to be named later they could get for him. And Hauser might actually be worth some. That old car might be worth money. It's really hard to pin down his value based on just like how well he's throwing. He could not possibly do more for the White Sox than he's done this year against bad offenses, against good offenses who are playing well. Like the stuff is better. It's not entirely smoke and mirrors. He's got more velocity. The curveball is a weapon that he didn't have before. Still doesn't miss bats a ton. You know, still relies on grounders and weak contact and, you know, a lot of double plays and a lot of Tim Elko defense to get through. But, you know, maybe he has like an ERA in low threes versus the ERA in the high ones, but like either way, it's worth something. So it's just a matter of what.
Yeah. I don't know if a contending team looking to acquire Adrian Hauser, Jim, is thinking that guy starting game three for us, right?
Yeah.
I still think that teams are going to be looking to help us out, you know, through the rest of the season, be our number four, be our number five, better options than what we currently have internally as far as looking at the young pitching depth that every team has. That's my assumption, but I think you are going to offer a counter that, well, maybe he's pitching so well despite all the contact that he allows and not the high strikeout numbers. Maybe you can count on him in the postseason.
I don't think you can count on him right now, but you know the trade deadline is he leaves 2 months. Entire months of August and September, things can happen. So, I mean, when it comes to somebody like Hauser's pitching as well as he has been, you know, maybe you think of him as a game four starter or somebody who goes one time through and then you start bringing the bullpen after that, the way managers manage postseason games. But if a starter gets injured and Hauser is still there and throwing well, then, you know, he might have to be your game three starter. And based on the way he's throwing, like, may as well give him the ball. So he's somebody you stockpile just to have around, I think is the idea. The way he's throwing right now, it's more than a, we just need to make sure we have six starters at all times, which is like, yeah, I would say a similar trade the White Sox pulled off was trading Miguel Gonzalez for Tyquan Forbes. Like that was a case of just, somebody can throw 160, 170 innings a year. You don't mind having him out there, but when September rolls around, if you need every single win, pennant race, he's not going to be somebody starting on short rest or anything like that. He just helps to fill out a rotation. The way Hauser's throwing now, I think it's more than that, but it's also a case of, well, he's not a huge arm. There's not a whole lot of projectability from here to where, like, if regression kicks him in the teeth, like, yeah, he's not missing bats. Of course, he's going to regress. But at the same time, the ERA is outstanding and the consistency has been outstanding. It's a quality start every time, except for one when he was sick. And even then, like he threw up early on against the Blue Jays and he, what do you say, puke and rally? So, I mean, like, even then, he seems to be learning. Like, if I'm not feeling well, just get out of my system and get back out there. So, even then, he's adjusted. Like, he's made the adjustments to the adjustments. And yeah, so I'm really, it's really fascinating and a really pleasant surprise to just see how this unfurls because, there were a lot of rental starters traded last year and the price tags were, it was a pretty wide range of price tags.
If you want to hear Adrian Hauser speak about the vomiting, he sat down with one of our friends, Courtney Finnecombe from the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast. And Courtney asked Adrian about that a few weeks ago. It's a great interview, and Adrian does a great job of explaining how nervous he gets before each outing, that his body just can't handle the pregame stress and something has got to go, and that's what ends up going.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, like, as somebody who hasn't, I'm trying to think last time, like 20 something years is the last time I barfed. Like I can't in I can't and somebody who's like a top, what percentile is he in for baseball players? Like top point something percent of baseball players. The fact that he gets so wound up that he has to purge, like it's in, kind of a foreign concept to me.
So it's hard to really pinpoint, at least for me, like what the White Sox could possibly get in return for Adrian Hauser. But we just heard from Chris Getz the difficulty that he's going to have in this upcoming trade deadline, Jim, acquiring position players. That's why there's so much of a focus, especially early in the MLB draft on Sunday from the White Sox, of drafting position players, because that is a need for the organization. If a team offers, I don't know, a shortstop or an outfielder that's maybe their 10th best prospect in their system, and understanding that not all prospect systems are equally ranked, so 10th in the Boston Red Sox system could be a lot better than 10th with the Angels system. But if teams are willing to give up position players for Adrian Hauser, is that the direction that Getz should be looking at?
Probably in an ideal scenario, but once they trade Hauser, they're going to need starters as well. Like, so I don't think you
Got
get
it,
greedy
yeah.
with him, and whatever the best return is, you go for it. Versus like with Garrett Crochet, he is really, after the way the Dylan Cease trade kind of unfolded in an anticlimactic fashion, and he couldn't get the bats he wanted, so he went for pitchers, and right now that trade return isn't looking great. I think with Crochet, he really held out for the position player package he wanted. And I was looking back at the last trade deadline, the reviews, the winners and losers pieces, just to see what the trade values were last year for rental starters. And you saw a lot of people putting Getz in the loser column for not trading Crochet or Luis Robert. Now, with Luis Robert, obviously, like the price tag has gone down. So yeah, that's a case where should have dealt him for whatever you could have gotten for him in hindsight. But with what he got for Crochet, it made sense for the way just he held out for that position player package and got what looks like a pretty good one. So when you have that kind of player, yeah, you can hold out. But I think for Hauser, who's found money at this point, you just try to turn him into You kind of one red paperclip it and try to keep trading upwards in somebody who's can make some kind of impact for longer, whatever position that may be.
Yeah, because I know Kylie McDaniel of ESPN and Eric Loggenhagen of Fangraphs, they use future value. So they put those grades on those prospects. I guess from my perspective, if any team's willing to offer a 45 future value grade player, no matter if it's a pitcher or position player, I think you got to take it, right? For Adrian Houser. Like, to your point, Jim, it's found money. A 45 grade future value prospect could be competing to be in the White Sox top 10 prospect rankings.
Yeah, the one trade that came to mind in terms of a highly regarded prospect, but also one that's far away, one that's buried in the system or kind of redundant in the system was, yeah, I was looking at rental starters. Yeah, Yusei Kikuchi.
Fernando Tatis Jr. Is this where we're going? No, we're going back to the James Shields trade.
No, I was looking at last year's market. So yeah, Yusei Kikuchi going for like Joey Loperfito we just saw. Three good prospects. That's a case of like, if you could pull like a Loperfito one-on-one, that'd be outstanding. Another one was Jack Flaherty, who got Tyrone Lorenzo and Trey Sweeney. Lorenzo is the guy I was thinking about in terms of like, could you get one instead of two players? Could you get one? A ball catcher who's really a catcher and might have to be a DH. I'm looking at Fangraph's ranking right now, gives him a 50. But a lot of things have to go right to capitalize on that 50. The Dodgers have catchers, so they're set for catchers. They didn't need him. And also he was like an A ball at the time. So, they felt okay parting with him, and Flaherty was good for the Dodgers. So it all worked out. I think both sides have to be happy, but that's a case where, I think that would be like a no brainer for that kind of deal. And then on the other end, in terms of like where Houser is in terms of, probably reputation or, name brand quality, pitch quality, bat missing is Michael Lorenzen. The Rangers traded him to the Royals for Walter Pennington, who was like a 26-year-old lefty, fringe starter, and then didn't even, he went through the rest of the season with the Rangers, did not do well with an audition, and then try to get through waivers. Then the Orioles claimed him on waivers, and so he's on the Orioles 40-man roster. So I think that's the range of outcomes where, maybe you can get like a 45 future value prospect from him. It'd be probably somebody who's distant from the majors, or you get to that fringe starter, fringe player, like we just saw that with the Matt Theis trade with Drew Baker, another kind of fringe roster member who, Theis was kind of found money. So they turn him into somebody, but it's not, you're not counting on Drew Baker being a fixture on a good team. So it was more like, we got to trade this guy who's somebody who can extend the timeline a little bit to see if we can turn him into somebody. I would hope that the White Sox could get more from Houser than they could from Theis. So I guess those are the parameters I'm kind of setting for a non-inspiring trade, which is Lorenzen one. And then like the hell of a steal, Chris Getz, that they could get pull one of those like 45, 50 future value prospects for Houser.
Yeah, Houser can put up his feet and relax. That was his last start prior to the All-Star break. So he's done. Really, he's on track to pitch the first game in Pittsburgh for the White Sox, which, a reminder, we cannot wait to see everyone in Pittsburgh. That's our annual road trip. Really looking forward to that. Not this weekend, but the following weekend, the first series after the All-Star break. We'll see if Adrian Houser's with the White Sox. Maybe this was his last start. We'll see if Chris Getz, how quickly GMs pivot from the MLB draft, which is only taking place over 2 days, Sunday and Monday, if suddenly during the All-Star game, text messages and phone calls are being made to see if any of the teams could use Adrian Houser. So I listed four teams that I think, if I was looking from their point of view, Jim, I'd be texting Chris Getz, how do I get this done after the All-Star break? The first team is the team that's seen Houser twice, and that's the Toronto Blue Jays. And Houser's pitched really well against the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays really need some starting pitching depth. They're in first place right now in the American League East, but they're doing this on, like, charitably a four-man rotation, but really it's like three starters and pray for the other 2 days. They really could use some starting pitching depth. So I got Blue Jays number one on my list. The number two list, pretty much for every single starting pitcher, just because of habit, the Los Angeles Dodgers. They are getting Tyler Glasnow to return, which is a bit of a surprise. And Shohei Ohtani is opening, but the Dodgers could use some more starting pitching depth. And it seems like Hauser would be a good fit with the Dodgers, especially how they are defensively, because it would make for great sports radio fodder. My third team on the list, the Chicago Cubs. And we're already starting to hear this type of speculation. Matt Spiegel and Lawrence Holmes, friends of the podcast, they've talked about it recently on 670 The Score. I think the Cubs could be a good target as far as that inner city type of trade between the White Sox and the Cubs. And my fourth team is the New York Mets, which the Mets, they could use a top of the line starter, but they could also use some depth in the back in the rotation. And they do know Adrian Hauser quite well. So those are the four teams that I have. Are there any teams that you could think of off the top of your head, Jim, that could maybe be someone that's aggressive in trying to acquire Adrian Hauser?
Yeah, aggressive. I could see, like, I would say any team with a deep farm system that has like Rule 5 issues coming up. You know, that's to me, maybe he fits. Yeah, every team needs five starters. So it's a case of if he comes cheap or comes what they might consider, you know, quote unquote free, because here's a player we weren't sure if we would rule five him anyway, or if we would protect him on the roster. Quality prospect, but we have four of these guys already on our team. Like, that's the kind of player I could see Hauser getting. I think that's why like Lo Perfido became available, because they had, you know, DH, you know, pretty much sets, and, you know, first base didn't quite work there. So he's bounced around. So I think that's why I think, the teams you listed are good. The Dodgers are always in the market. Dodgers always have guys that could trade. I would just recommend for Chris Getz that he not trade for players with broken legs, because Alexander Albertus is still a mess. Like, he's supposed to be fine by spring training. He still hasn't played in a complete game for the White Sox this year. He's currently back on the injured list, or currently in this limbo state of just, hasn't played in consecutive games, he's kind of between rosters right now. So this is, July, and he's supposed to be ready by spring training. So yeah, healthy players. That would be my recommendation.
Well, let us know in the comments section, or hit us up on social media, some other teams that you could think of that could be possible trade targets or aggressors in trying to acquire Adrian Hauser. But I think he becomes the White Sox top trade asset prior to the deadline. Number two, I think, for the White Sox at trade assets is Mike Tauchman. And Tauchman is on a heater. In his last seven games, he's 12 for 26. In his last 15 games, he's batting .351. But I think everyone is familiar with the injury history for Mike Tauchman, especially this season. You don't really want him to run a whole lot. He has been making very good defensive plays in right field for the White Sox this year, but you have to be mindful, again, of that lower half and the hamstring injuries that Tauchman has gone through. But he continues to hit, Jim. And I just wonder, is Tauchman going to be a coveted bat earlier before the deadline, or are we talking to July 31st? He's still with the White Sox, and we have to be ready for Hug Watch before the White Sox play the Phillies on July 30th, because the White Sox do have an off day on July 31st.
I think he's probably going to be closer to Hug Watch. I think he's somebody teams don't settle for necessarily, but maybe have as a backup plan to grander ambitions. I don't know if any team's killing to get Mike Tauchman just because of the health issue. Like, I think if they made him their plan A for, we're going to upgrade our outfield, we're going to upgrade our DH with Mike Tauchman, and then like he has a third hamstring issue on August 3rd and knocks him out for 3 weeks, and teams like, what do we do that for? So I think teams would want to make sure that he's running, he's full capacity, he's playing the outfield. The White Sox are putting forth the use case that they would have for him. And then I think it's a matter of, like, he's not the most exciting player. He's playing really well now. To me, it kind of reminds me a little bit of like a David Peralta type, and that like nobody is like
Okay.
champing at the bit for, yeah, gotta get David Peralta. He's gonna be the difference between us making the World Series and not, but he's like a useful player. He was above replacement level, average to sometimes slightly above, depending on like defensive metrics, how that worked out that year. And a lefty bat, so that always helps. Hit enough home run. Yeah, like I was looking at his history, of course. Like he had a 2018, 2019 weirdness where everybody's hitting homers. Like he hit homers then, but otherwise he's like a 15 home run guy, decent average, decent OBP, decent defense. And like I'm looking at the deal. Yeah, he's July 30th. So he was at end of deadline. Gotta get somebody. The Rays ended up getting him. The guy they traded for him still hasn't made the majors, but it was a case of that's kind of what he reminds me of. Somebody who can be moved, somebody teams look at and say, well, yeah, Dave Brawl could work for us. But just given the age, given the injury history so far this year, it probably strikes me as a wait to the last minute, give the White Sox every chance to break him. And if they don't, then all right, then I guess he's good.
All right, so we're waiting to the very end for Mike Talkman. I have three teams on my list because I'm thinking more, what are the teams that need DH help? And number one on the list that I have that could be a target for Mike Talkman are the San Diego Padres. The
Yeah, I have them.
Padres for DH have a 57 weighted runs created plus, and old friend Gavin Sheets has really cooled off. 40 games at DH for the Padres. Sheets has a 90 weighted runs created plus, but that's a 658 OPS. That's not good enough at your DH, and Luis Arraez has only played 15 games this year at DH. Everyone else, though, for the Padres has just really nosedived. Again, Sheets at 90 WRC plus. The Padres as a team are at 57. So there's a lot more Padres hitters that are really struggling in those DH opportunities. Second is the Houston Astros, because it's unclear what's going on with Yordan Alvarez and how effective and how available he's going to be. The Astros are playing great baseball as of late. I know they're having a tough time against the Cleveland Guardians as we're currently recording this episode, but they just went to Los Angeles and easily swept the Los Angeles Dodgers. So that could be one of those depth type of pieces for the Astros, just adding a veteran presence on their bench or even take up those DH spots in August and September. And the other team that I had was the San Francisco Giants. Wilmer Flores has been their DH for 63 games this year. He's got a 94 weighted runs created plus, according to Fangraphs. Maybe Talkman can either platoon with Flores at that spot at DH or take up most of those at bats. San Diego is easily the number one target for someone like Mike Talkman. Is there anyone else on your list that you could think of, Jim, that could be a good fit for Mike Talkman?
One was the Texas Rangers. They're another team.
Are they going to be buyers,
They're
though?
close enough to where, looking at this, so
Are they close enough to that they're not going to
they're
give
three
up?
games out. So yeah, they're in the same group with the Royals and Twins, and the Royals can use outfield help too, and they're
Oh,
picking
yeah.
up as of late. So the Royals are there too. Just with when it comes to the Royals, I wonder if they just think Kauffman Stadium is a huge outfield for him to cover. It's a lot of full speed running for him. And so, maybe they want somebody who's, and they need all the offense they can get. Maybe the Royals need a surer bet than Talkman, just for the value that they prioritize defense, or they want to prioritize defense. They've seen what it looks like when they don't get defense from a corner outfielder who also doesn't hit. So I don't know if he's a good fit there, but like the Rangers are in a weird spot. Like they have their outfield seems pretty much set, except like their outfield's also been kind of a mess. Like I think Adelise Garcia is somebody that he was so huge for them, but he's also not doing anything this year. They've already bailed on Jock Peterson, and they're doing a mishmash at DH there. So I could see them if they get hot enough to where they're in that run for that final spot, but don't want to like mortgage a position, but also like they can rotate Talkman between right field and DH. Maybe he's somebody who meets their price tag, and if the White Sox are just happy to get anybody for him, like that's. Perhaps he appeals to them because if if like they are driven by, Marcus Semien and Corey Seager, and like Seager's hurt and Semien's not quite right, and the whole, that park has been just hell for hitters all year. Like it's turned into a really pitcher-friendly ballpark, and nobody's hitting there. So perhaps like they just have to really reconsider the stadium after the end of the year, and don't want to put huge bets. But also, like they're a major market team, they're a big payroll team. Like they shouldn't give up on seasons that or something's in reach. Sure, like I think it makes sense, but it's a case of end of July. Does it cost somebody that they have no plans for? Sure, why not?
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, to your point, you got the Royals, Twins, and Rangers within 3 games of the wild card. The Angels are 3.5 games out of the wild card. They will not die. And the Guardians, which we'll talk about in a moment, they're four and a half
Yeah,
games
they're one of the
back
teams I thought
of the
about,
wild
like the White
card.
Sox trading with them for like pitching help, because their rotation's been steady but also like not great. I just don't know who they'd trade. Like, but the White Sox did really well trading with them last time, getting Kai Bush and Edgar Caro for rental or two rentals.
Yeah.
So, they crossed my mind. I'm just not sure who, because that farm system is pretty ragged. And
It's pretty
yeah, and
depleting.
like Carroll was a good prospect. Bush was an interesting prospect. They just were rushed. They skipped
Yeah.
Carroll in high A for some reason. They went straight from low A to double A. Bush was rushed back, or he was accelerated through coming back from injury, and so he was getting beat up at a higher level than he should have been pitching. So if there are any depressed assets in the Angels system that are possibly being mismanaged, the White Sox have done that before.
Yes, they have. Well, we'll see. If you guys, again, just like with Adrian Hauser, if you guys have teams in mind for Mike Talkman that the White Sox could trade Talkman to, let us know in the comment section at SoxMachine.com or hit us up on social media. I think those are the two top targets right now for the White Sox to trade assets. It's not sexy, Jim. I know Luis Robert is back, but Robert really needs to hit post All-Star break. I think he's going to be a last-minute move. For Chris Getz, if he can unload him, that's going to have to be more creative on the money side than someone like Adrian Hauser or Mike Talkman. But keep Talkman healthy, and Adrian Hauser, I'm still shocked that he's with the White Sox right now. I would not be shocked if we're in Pittsburgh and we're getting ready to walk into PNC Park and we have to stop and go back to the hotel room, Jim, and do an emergency podcast from the hotel because the White Sox traded Adrian Hauser before he's making that
Yeah, I mean,
start.
I could see, same argument for Talkman not being dealt until like the last days of the trade deadline. You could see a similar case for Hauser, just wanting to make sure that he doesn't turn into a pumpkin immediately. He's pitching so well, regression of some form has to come. So do they want the White Sox to absorb some of that regression? But on the other hand, like when it comes to starting pitching and the wide variety of quality or reputation, like the guys I mentioned, like Kikuchi and Flaherty to Lorenzen, like there's a wide range of guys who fit a bill of helping to cross a day off a calendar or potential postseason starter. And if a team wants to jump on a certain player, figuring like he's the right price, and if he somehow maintains his current form, then we don't need him to be a number two starter, but if he continues looking like a number two starter, then hell yeah, us. Like, I could see
Yeah.
a team jumping the market maybe because, like, the White Sox have a certain player in mind, and that team decides, oh, we can part with that guy. We're going to trade him for somebody anyway, this deadline. May as well be Hauser. Like, that's how I could see it coming together faster. Otherwise, I could see him lasting, a couple more starts just because teams want to see, like, is this guy actually for real? Or is this the start where he throws 92 instead of 95? And, we see the reasons why the White Sox were able to sign him from a AAA roster in the first place.
If the White Sox do start Hauser in that first game in Pittsburgh, his next start would be still on the road at Tampa. He would avoid that home series against the Chicago Cubs. So if he pitches well against the Pirates, which they don't have a dangerous offense, Tampa Bay sometimes can hit at home. But if he continues his progress where he has a sub-2 ERA through 11 starts, it avoids one of the best offenses in Major League Baseball. Well, then maybe, just maybe, you have increased a little bit in the quality in Adrian Hauser. Or maybe you do want him to face the Cubs, and if he shuts down the Chicago Cubs, that will even increase his trade value more. I have to think about that. But yeah, we'll see in how the White Sox manipulate their pitching staff post All-Star break. But I'm assuming it'll be Adrian Hauser to be the first pitcher post All-Star break that Friday game against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Well, for the Chicago White Sox, again, as I mentioned in the intro, this is going to be a very festive weekend. This is the 2005 World Series reunion. On Friday, it will be the unveiling of the Mark Burley statue. James Feegan got a chance to speak to the team that sculpted the new statue for Mark Burley, so we'll have some insight on that on SoxMachine.com. Really interesting stuff coming from James regarding the statue. Fans will be getting a replica statue for the Saturday game. There's going to be a ton of meet and greet for the White Sox season ticket holders with 2005 personnel. Ozzy will be there taking pictures with fans and a lot of the ex-players as well. And on Sunday is maybe the most interesting bobblehead the White Sox will have this season. The four consecutive complete games for the American League Championship Series, all in one bobblehead. That'll be given out on Sunday. So definitely be, if you have tickets for Sunday's game, make sure you arrive early. The Cleveland Guardians coming into town for this four-game series. The Guardians are 43-48. They had a really rough stretch where they lost 10 straight games at one point. They have won their last three games. They are 3-7 in their last 10. Offensively, the Guardians are a little more dangerous on the road than at home this year. On the road, they're averaging only 3.89 runs per game. At home or overall for the season, it's at 3.66. So an uptick away from Cleveland, but still not great for the Guardians. As a team, OPS on the road this year, 673, not very dangerous. On the pitching side, the starters this year, it's a 4.06 ERA. That's middle of the pack. What's surprising for the Guardians is that the bullpen is also middle of the pack. They had a historic season last year coming out of the relievers, and regression has hit Cleveland hard. In combination with the offense not clicking, that's not a good mixture of success for the Cleveland Guardians. The relievers this year have a 3.89 ERA. That's good for 17th in Major League Baseball. Your pitching problems for this series, Thursday night, 6:40 p.m. Central Time. Left-handed pitcher Logan Allen will take the ball for the Guardians against Jonathan Cannon for the White Sox. Friday night, 7:10 p.m. Central Time start. Gavin Williams will take the ball for the Guardians against Shane Smith. This is Smith's last appearance before the All-Star break. And then on Saturday, you have Sean Burke taking the ball for the White Sox. That's a 3:10 p.m. Central Time start. And then on Sunday, Aaron Civale will make the last start before the All-Star break for the White Sox. It'll be left-handed pitcher Joey Cantillo for the Guardians. I mentioned the lefties, the White Sox offense this year. Team OPS against left-handed pitching, 669. That's 17th in Major League Baseball. Against right-handed pitching this year, 632. That's the worst in Major League Baseball. So here we go again. The White Sox struggling to hit right-handed pitching, something I'm going to be paying attention to in this series, especially in late game situations, and the fact that the White Sox have players like Edgar Caro and Colson Montgomery and Mike Tauchman. They have more left-handed bats in this lineup, but they're still struggling against right-handed pitching. But turning the attention back to the Guardians, Jim. The Guardians, a tremendous success story last year, winning the American League Central, really surprising a lot of people in doing so with a new manager. But at 43-48, even though they haven't played better baseball as of late, do you foresee the Guardians being sellers before the trade deadline, knowing that ownership for Cleveland just does not spend?
They could be, which is kind of non-committal. But the one thing, when you look at their schedule, I think this is a big series for the Guardians because they had a 10-game losing streak. But when you look at who they played to kind of fall into terrible stretch, Blue Jays lost the series. Cardinals lost all three. Cubs lost all three. Tigers lost all three. And then they go on and sweep the Astros in Houston. So, you know, there's a little bit of a return there. But, like, those are good teams. And when you look at their record against teams 500 or better, 21-37, like that's the worst record of any team that fashions itself a contender. So if they're getting by on bum sling, then perhaps there's just fewer bums to go around this year, or at least they are one of those under 500 teams, and they fit the bill accordingly. But when you look at their schedule coming up, White Sox, then after the break, the A's, the Orioles, the Royals, the Rockies to finish out the month. Like that's a pretty soft schedule. The Orioles are playing better, but and the Royals are, they've strung together some wins too. So those are teams that have, if nothing else, pride on the line. But if the Guardians are going to be a contender, they have to beat teams like the Orioles and Royals. They have to step above them. So Jose Ramirez is missing the All-Star game to rest up and have something for the stretch run. So it seems like the players are taking it seriously. I don't think they've gotten any kind of word or perhaps like the they're in no player agent saying like, hey, you're likely to be moved here because the Guardians are gonna be selling. So it seems like they are still open-minded, and if they, we've seen them sweep the White Sox in four games. Like if they sweep the Sox and then they, torch the A's who are struggling as well, all of a sudden, like, it's a different looking standing. So that's why I think it's probably too soon. They're a team that can wait a little bit, but yeah, if the White Sox split a series, if they lose two out of three of the A's, then yeah, time is running out for them.
Yeah, I don't foresee the Guardians being buyers.
Yeah.
Like, I even if they did finish the month strong, it is what they've got. Like, what they currently have now is what they're going to have at the end of September to try to make the postseason. So I think it's a more of a decision of do we stay pat or do we sell? Like, I just don't see the Guardians even being buyers, even if they do finish July strong. Even though you go on social media and you see the outcry. And I give Guardians fans a lot of credit, Jim. It is consistent. Even when the Guardians are good and they are playing well above expectations like last year, Guardians fans have been on ownership forever in the sense of why does this ownership group not spend at all? Like you signed Jose Ramirez and you kept Jose Ramirez. Why haven't you been more aggressive in trying to add more payroll and build the strongest team possible? Like, why are the Guardians today not the Guardians of the 90s,
Yeah.
right? Where they just tormented and were just a nightmare for everyone in the
Well,
American
it's like
League.
they have the White Sox problem of like right field and DH. They're, in second base, they're always looking for the same positions, which I think just adds to the frustration. Like, it's been 5 years. Why don't we have an outfielder besides Stephen Kwan? Like, I think those are the arguments that they have. Like, why can't we find a first baseman? And then they get a first baseman kind of slash DH with Josh Naylor. And then they trade him and they can't replicate his production. So I think that's why it's especially irritating for them just year after year of just watching outfielders can't hit and getting by with this really deep rotation and being able to solve gaps on the pitching staff on the fly. And then, I think we saw with their bullpen, running out of gas towards the end of last year, just relying so much on Emmanuel Clase. And then, we've seen that before, like the Royals. They had that bullpen centric run, worked for a couple of years, but then eventually you can't do that. The Orioles, same thing. They had some elite bullpens, and then once the bullpen starts to go, then you realize, oh, the offense is needs to win some games, and it can't. I mean, that's the whole reason why we bitched for years about the White Sox, just investing in relievers, and not actually building up the offense to give them leads. So it is, I can understand why they just see the same mistakes being made every year and just seeing like a front office or an ownership that's too content to win a division because, right now they're not going to win the division. They're not going to come close to winning the division. Tigers are going to run away with it. And then like you're just hoping for the third wild card spot at that point with an offense that just can't compete. And it's the tough thing is, for them, and I think, why it feels precarious maybe. And I always go back to this when people fear monger about the White Sox leaving Chicago is the example I give is if you put the Guardians track record in Chicago, they draw what 2.5 million fans easy a year. If you put the White Sox track record in Cleveland like struggles to draw 2 million with like a team that's winning over and over again because they just don't invest and the market's smaller, so they're just not getting the market energized. But like if you put the White Sox last 10 years in Cleveland, Do they draw 1.1 million? I imagine they draw a million. It's hard to not draw a million, but they might come close. So, you know, they've been really good at, you know, once competing in a weak division to why they've been so enduring in their quality, but also like they have strengths and they play with those strengths, but also like they've done nothing to meaningfully address the weaknesses. And then when you have this year where the bullpen isn't elite and they trade from the offense and don't make up for it. And it's just Ramirez and Kwan and then everybody else. You can understand why they are just staring at just a team that's struggling to be 500 and being like, this is foreseeable.
And then swinging back to the White Sox, a lot of old friends coming back to Chicago, Jim, out of everyone that's returning for the 2005 reunion, who are you most looking forward to seeing on TV?
I mean, like looking at the roster of players coming back, like it's amazing. Like the turnout is incredible. And like, you know, I'm looking at the list, like the only sole contributors out there is Bobby Jenks, rest in peace. Like, but everybody else seems like, you know, they've gotten the whole staff. They've gotten the,
Aaron Rowand is not going to be there.
I was looking, their outfielder short because Brian Anderson's on there. So it's like, so I was trying to play some, but yeah. So Aaron Rowand isn't there, but like they got the pitching staff there. They have the starting infields there. So yeah, just it's really impressive. Like Juan Uribe, I think, is always fun in big settings like that. So I'm looking forward to seeing him. For the Society for American Baseball Research, I helped contribute to their 2005 book, just the 20 years since. And I wrote the player biography for Pablo Azuna, who I forgot about the age gate thing and that he was 4 years older than he was listed. He was a top prospect with the Cardinals, and then he got traded to the Marlins, and he got traded for Edgar Renteria, and Edgar Renteria ended up being younger than him because he was lying about his age. Like he forged age to where like the Cardinals traded somebody older for a younger, more proven player. And it was fascinating. Like,
whoops.
Yeah. And, wow. You know, and that was one of the strange byproducts of, you know, so much of the world changed after 9/11. And that was one of them, was all of a sudden we need to tighten up our security and who's coming in and out. We need more documentation on these players coming in. And then all of a sudden started like scrutinizing birth records and being like, ooh, yeah, I think it's like 100 players, something like that. But Azuna was one of them. But, fascinating how he still managed to overcome that and cobble together a major league career. And, you know, I think Ozzy did a good job managing him, but it was fun. I worked with a Sabre member named Tony who could speak Spanish, and Azuna only wanted to conduct the interview in Spanish, did a phoner with him. And so like I had a list of questions, and like the last one was the age gate thing, just because like, you know, who knows, it could be a sensitive subject, and he might, if you ask that first, he might shut down and give two word answers the rest of the way. And all of a sudden, like you can't even get like the basic, like, what did your parents do? Like the kind of stuff you need to fill out the biographical parts, because you don't get a lot of that from English language coverage of Spanish players, like they're, especially for role players. And so we say that question for the end, but like, yeah, you know, I read the transcript, the answers, like he said, like, yeah, I'd do it again if I had to, like my career, like it just, you know, in order to stand out, like you had to, you know, that avenue was available to him. And so he said, like, yeah, just, you know, it was the advice he got. And, you know, he's just put his career in people's hands, and like, it worked out for him. Like it's a case of, it was just something that was done. And so it's fascinating, but like, it's cool seeing like players who didn't get a lot of run, or just because, in terms of the press, because of either their roles or language barriers. And like, it's cool seeing Azuna now that I've learned so much about him in this process, like it'll be good to see him again. And like, apparently he's doing well in Dominican, like he's got some businesses, invest in a gym, real estate. So he's doing well. So good for him.
That's awesome. I am a bit surprised how Hito Iguchi is going to be in Chicago.
It's cool. I think he's been back before at least once. So like not a huge shocker, but like good. You know, it's just tough. The logistics of him coming back are more difficult than other players. So yeah, it's great to see him. But I think, yeah, looking at the list, so many players have come back in one way or another. You know, like El Duque, that's cool to see him. Like, he's not somebody you know, frequently in the White Sox orbit. So he's another one I'm looking forward to seeing. But yeah, I think just in terms of playing to the crowd, getting the response, giving the reporters what they want to hear in terms of just like great quotes people love hearing, like people love talking to Uribe, I think he's my guy.
Yeah, Uribe is a great pick. But yeah, Tadahito Gucci is mine. And again, the bobblehead is awesome. It's Burley, Contreras, Garland, and Garcia, and all four of them are going to be there as well this weekend.
Also, John Rooney. He's back.
Oh, yeah.
So that's cool.
That is awesome. Yeah. Jeff Blum is also going to be taking the weekend off from calling Houston Astros games and joining the White Sox. So it'll be a very fun weekend. It'll be a great way to end this homestand for the White Sox prior to the All-Star break, is reminiscing about 2005. White Sox fans, I'm assuming, will be very packed Friday night and Saturday pregame to get pictures and see the new Mark Burley statue. And again, we'll have more details about how that statue came to be on SoxMachine.com from James Fegan as we get inch closer to the weekend. But again, we'll be recapping this series in our next podcast episode, which we'll be recording on Sunday night. And to conclude this episode of the Sox Machine podcast, this is the last time that Jim and I will get a chance to speak or at least do a show before the MLB draft. I spent a lot of time talking to Jim Callis about the MLB draft. I got a couple more, at least two more articles coming your guys' way at SoxMachine.com, my mock draft. I'd also give you guys an opportunity to fill out a mock draft yourself as far as your final guesses before the draft, and some additional player profiles just to cover all bases, to use a baseball pun and analogy, making sure that we have all the players that could be possibly in the scope of the White Sox to either pick 10 or pick 44. After pick 44, it's a crapshoot on who is available, what the strategy is for the White Sox. But Jim Margulis, after all this time covering the MLB draft and the college scene since Valentine's Day, on Sunday at pick number 10, who do you want the White Sox to take?
Well, as we know, I put a lot of trust in your coverage because you look at this a lot closer than I do. Like, I'm very much a dilettante when it comes to amateur baseball. And I'm good with the shortstop. Like, I think, you know, pick 10, you know, hard to know who's going to be available. Like, you and Jim Callis sold me on JoJo Parker being like a great pick. Like, I think I like him more than Billy Carlson. Yeah, I like Billy Carlson's defense. The talk about fixing a swing, even though they say it's easy. Like, can the White Sox do that? They have Ryan Fuller. I would give them, if not the benefit of the doubt, at least an open mind for doing so. But still, that kind of makes me a little bit nervous. But, you know, you made this point, you know, back with the CJ Abrams days versus Andrew Vaughn, of just the track record of shortstops contributing in some way or form, whether it's, you know, just being an okay player or being like a, you know, Francisco Lindor type, is very good no matter where they're picked in the first round within reason. But yeah, you know, it's a case of, you know, sometimes a guy picked 16th might turn out better than the guy picked third, just on the way these guys develop. So I like the idea of a shortstop. Like, I saw Baseball America's had Jamie Arnold, Florida State lefty, breaking ball, low slot lefty, but just like, they just won the low slot lefty last year, and Hagen Smith's struggling. Noah Schultz is, you know, he's ahead of schedule. Like, Schultz is ahead of schedule, but also like, he's struggling against AAA hitters, against righties this year. So I know the White Sox like low slot lefties. I'm not convinced that they can turn anyone into gold right away. So I don't see necessarily the benefit of, yeah, I can see the idea of like Jamie Arnold if all the, you know, the shortstops they like are taken. Like, and like, we may as well go to this draft's other strength of good college arms, because the good shortstops, the other strength is taken. But hopefully there will be one of the shortstops available in order to feel good about. So that's kind of where I'm thinking.
Okay. So Jim Wentz, a position player. I mean, I don't think Chris Getz has been that deceptive when he speaks to the media and speaks publicly. And the fact that he has mentioned multiple times, we need more position players in this system. There's no better way of doing so than in the draft. And even if JoJo Parker and Billy Carlson are off the board, you still have a few other prep shortstops that you could take 10th overall. And then you can play the bonus game at pick 44, another opportunity to take another prep position player to start the second round. I am not buying the Cruz Schoolcraft rumors at all. I'll write more about why in my mock draft. I'll make the case why they could and the case why it doesn't logistically make any sense, especially what's being spoken about within college baseball circles and the type of NIL money that Schoolcraft could be getting from Tennessee and who his agent now is, Scott Boras.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see that. So
advisor, again, advisor, right?
No.
Oh, you can say
you can now be an agent.
Okay.
So not only would Boras be representing him in MLB talks, Boras could represent him in NIL talks with Tennessee. Oh yeah, his business expanded.
Yeah.
So again, I'll have my mock draft. I'll be playing out the scenarios. You guys have been following. You've been awesome all year, giving me feedback and giving me your thoughts about the MLB draft and the type of prospects that you like. But it's coming up on Sunday, and it'll be a pretty big day for the White Sox. Another opportunity for them to add more position player talent to the pipeline that they really, really do need. And again, we'll have that MLB draft show on our playback channel, playback.tv/SoxMachine. We'll also have that video on youtube.com/SoxMachine as well. And we'll give our thoughts on the at least the first round pick for the White Sox, hopefully the second round pick as well at pick 44 on Sunday's episode when we record that and have it ready for you guys on Monday morning as we enter the All-Star break and the Home Run Derby and the All-Star game on Tuesday and the most boring day of the calendar year on Wednesday when nothing is going on. And then we'll all be on flights and in our cars making our way to Pittsburgh the following weekend. But thank you so much for listening to this edition of the Sox Machine Podcast. If you just discovered the Sox Machine Podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. You can watch our videos, including our draft videos, which we took highlights of key prospects throughout the college baseball and high school baseball season as well. You can go to youtube.com/SoxMachine to check those out. I also recorded a video with Jim Callis as we built the White Sox watch board for pick number 10. You can follow us on social media. We're on all the platforms at Sox Machine. You can follow our beat reporter, James Fegan, at JR Fegan. You can follow me at SoxMachine_Josh. We're on Blue Sky. If you're on Blue Sky, we're at SoxMachine.com. James is at JRFegan.SoxMachine.com. I am Josh.SoxMachine.com. If you love our work and you love to support us, you want full access to all of our coverage of the Chicago White Sox, the MLB draft, and other happenings with the majors and the minor league affiliates for the White Sox, you can sign up to become a Sox Machine supporter at SoxMachine.com. Monthly plans start at $5. That gets you the ad-free version of both the podcast and the website. We also have some spots open at our Veterans Committee, which gets you to the group chat so you can text directly to James what is going on with the White Sox clubhouse. Are you seeing players hug each other? Is someone being traded? Great insight was James texted everyone that Kyle Teal was yelling in the clubhouse, "Where's Tim Oko?" And we knew that Tim Oko was returning to the White Sox before it was officially announced by the White Sox. So again, if you want that type of insight, you can get it by joining the Sox Machine Veterans Committee. You can sign up at SoxMachine.com. The Sox Machine Podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Alongside Jim Margulis, I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.